It is Friday, December 27th. It is the best Fridays in football, playoff edition. We are about 26 hours, maybe 27 hours, from the kickoff of the college football playoff, the 2019-2020 season. And Menace to Sports is bringing you the raw, real, insider account and college football analysis that no one else brings. Welcome to our episode. We are going to go ad-free, sponsor-free. Wanted to make this one all clean, all playoff analysis. So let's get this thing started. We're finally going to renumber our episodes so we can do the analytics that we need to do. So we had two platforms. I'm not going to bore you with the story, but this is episode 59 is technically and now officially episode 71. It's our 71st episode because we had 12 miscellaneous episodes in our feed and before we combined them. So we have 1.32 million total downloads. We're going to hit 1.5 million before year's end. That in the short 7 month life of this show. And doing the analytic research over the holiday, we got to shout out our listeners. We have a bunch of listeners in Europe and like we have UK, Germany, Australia, Japan, some places in the Middle East. So we want to shout out our international listeners. It's really cool. Just behind the US and Canada, they're the next highest countries that tune in and round out our top five global reach countries. But enough about our show, enough about analytics. It's time to talk a little football, man. So let's get to the show.
That's why I don't read the newspaper. Because it's garbage, and the editor that let it come out is garbage.
Or do you do what everybody else in media does, just create some shit and throw it on the wall and see what sticks, which is what I see happening everywhere.
Where are we at in society today? I'm a man. I'm 40.
When my time on Earth is gone and my activities here are past, I want they bury me upside down and my critics can kiss my
Welcome to episode 71, Menace to Sports. I am Zach Smith, your host. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening. And please do me a favor as you listen to the show, maybe pause it right now and shoot out a tweet supporting the show, trying to expand the show. If you're listening, tweet at us right now at Menace to Sports and let people know this show's the shit. But before we get to the playoff analysis, let's talk a little current events. How about Mike Yurich, quarterback coach from Ohio State, has been reported to have taken the Texas offensive coordinator job. And imagine this, a Texas situation, and the breaking news comes from Burt McDouche McMurphy. How about that? Who'd have thought? But certainly, they don't have any connection. He's just a reporter, and it's just coincidence. But how about the audacity that Tom Herman had to have Burt release this breaking news 2 days before the Buckeyes' huge game Saturday? That should infuriate Ohio State fans, more so than Tom Herman already has. It also shows you really the situation at Ohio State and how the staff operates because it shows you how little input and control Yurich had at Ohio State. I mean, obviously, Kevin Wilson's the coordinator. Ryan Day is calling the plays. Ryan Day's probably the critical hand in developing Fields, running the quarterbacks, along with newly departed Corey Dennis, Urban Meyer's son-in-law, who just went to Colorado State. Those two worked with the quarterbacks last year, and I'd imagine they did this year too. And they did wonders with Dwayne Haskins, so it isn't surprising that Justin Fields is playing the way he's playing. So good luck to Mike Yurich. I'm sure Ohio State fans won't notice he is gone because Ryan is still in town. But good for Tom. Tom's got to go try to get other people to run an offense that he's the offensive guru of. But other news, the Ohio State O-line announced they're coming back for 2020. And Wyatt Davis was the only real question here, right? He was an All-American, played really well this year. I think he could have left. It's not common that a guard is a first-rounder in the first place. I think he had a shot to be. Certainly coming back will help that in the future. I've been around very few guards that do go in the first round. Usually it's tackles and centers. So congratulations to Justin Fields, Ryan Day, and the whole Buckeye Nation, really. The other question is, I guess, Josh Myers and Thayer Mumford announced they're going to come back. And my question was, come back from what? Like, where were they going? They weren't going to the NFL. I mean, sometimes players do that, and you're like, you're coming back from where? From vacation? From your house? What do you mean you're coming back? You couldn't go anywhere. Free agency? But good for them. They made the right decision. I don't know why it warranted an announcement. Obviously, Wyatt did warrant an announcement. But One thing I want to throw out there, I want to get Ohio State's fans' blood boiling. I'm not going to call it the dumbass sports media personality of the week, but I want to play a little Colin Cowherd riding Clemson's dick for you. Here you go.
Clemson minus two. I like Clemson to win by a touchdown. I thought the number was low. I think we're undervaluing Clemson. I think we look at their conference and say they didn't play anybody, and that is a huge benefit. They are healthy. They've got a ton of depth. And I believe when you don't know who's going to win, you go with a coaching staff in college. And I think Clemson has the best coaching staff by a wide margin. They have three current head coaches, capable guys that could run programs. Dabo's just the number one guy. I'm going to take Clemson here. First of all, Trevor Lawrence since week nine, good luck. Ohio State's defense gets the credit. I could argue Clemson's is actually better. First in the country in multiple categories. Trevor Lawrence since week nine has been unstoppable. I don't think the ACC is great. But who in the Big Ten is amazing outside of Ohio State? Michigan? Lost all the good teams they played. Wisconsin? Well coached, certainly. Not a ton of great NFL players. Who else you selling me in that conference? Iowa? Okay, not special. Listen, right now Ohio State's defense is good, but in the last four games, they're allowing 21 a game. That's against Big Ten defenses. Clemson, NFL back, NFL quarterback.
All right, I had to turn it off. Sorry. First of all, Ohio State's defense is not allowing 21 points to anyone's defense, you jackass. So let me just preface. I want to evaluate what he just said. First of all, I disagree entirely with his prediction. However, the points he made are accurate, other than the coaching staff point and the fact that he said defenses score points on defenses. He makes really good points. My issue is, you know, everyone's entitled to their analysis opinion, and he may be right, may be wrong. The issue is, this is the same douchebag that was, I mean, just all over Clemson for not playing anyone. They haven't played anyone. They almost lost to North Carolina. Shouldn't be in the playoff. And now it's like a 7-point favorite over Ohio State. People forget that Clemson's good. It's like, no, bitch, you forgot Clemson was good. Shut the fuck up. I can't stand the hypocrisy in the media. But I just had to throw that out there, mainly to get Ohio State's fans' blood boiling on the eve of the college football playoff. So in true fashion, we're going to start this playoff analysis with the 4 o'clock game. Saturday, tomorrow, in Atlanta, the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl, LSU, Oklahoma. Some critical, critical, critical losses for both teams. First, the obvious one that's been in the news is three suspended players at Oklahoma. Ronnie Perkins is the biggest one. I mean, he leads Oklahoma in sacks with six. He's a critical piece of their front seven. And I went back over the last 7 days and rewatched half of it, all four of these teams' seasons. And he is such a critical piece for the front seven and for pass rush for Alex Grinch's defense. He has the most tackles by a D-end in the college football playoff. That's how important he is. He has the highest run stop percentage. I mean, I went through this when I made the all CFP team. Second most QB pressures behind Chase Young. Second most sacks behind Chase Young. He's a difference maker. The other one's Ramondre Stevenson. Plays a lot. He actually is the most explosive running back on Oklahoma's roster, averaging over 8 yards a carry. Now, starting running back Kennedy Brooks was questionable for the game. It looks like he's going to play, but not having Ramondre Stevenson is a huge loss on offense. And the other one's Trayhon Bridges, just a reserve receiver, special team, or no big deal. And then also Oklahoma on defense lost their second leading tackler, their safety, Delarin Turner-Yell. He broke his collarbone a little over a week ago, and he will not play. And that is a major loss. So Oklahoma has really had some issues since their last game, since the Big 12 championship. They've had, I mean, what is that, four big-time players that are not going to play, really three big-time players. And then LSU, huge, huge news. And people don't realize, I don't think, how good this kid is. Their starting running back, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, has had a hamstring injury on Wednesday and has not practiced since. And Ed Orgeron can say he's a game-time decision, but reality is he's not going to be the same player, even if he can play. If he hasn't been able to practice or do anything for 3 days, he may be able to try to play, but he's going to be, what, 75% at best? And he really emerged as a dynamic runner and filled a major void early in the year for the Tiger offense. I mean, they were the Joe Burrow show. The pass game was elite. The run game was non-existent. And in the second half of the year, he averaged 124 yards and two scores per game. That's a huge blow to the nation's best offense. And the most outrageous shit that I heard was that they could sit him this game so that he's healthy for the national championship. Like, what? You can't sit anyone in the playoffs. Oklahoma can win this game. Make sure everyone hears that. Oklahoma could win the game. LSU needs to give it everything they have or they will lose. So whoever's saying that is a joke. But I want to start off the analysis after that kind of news segment with a little segment called From the Film Room. I just went through and I really just took notes, watched six games on each team, and I took notes. And I want to share with you my notes on what I saw on film and what I think that people should know about both teams playing. First, starting with LSU. Everyone knows how good Joe Burrow is. They see stats. They see completions. Here's what Joe Burrow is ridiculous at. He evades free rushers or he beats free rushers with his throw better than anyone in America. His presence in the pocket and maneuvering like D-line twists and pass pro breakdowns are what make him the best quarterback in the country. His pocket awareness, his escapability, his ability to extend plays. On top of that, the offensive scheme is ridiculous. It's excellent. I mean, when they play a man team or a man situation, they have bunches. They have switch releases, stacks, little pick plays. Joe Burrow's arsenal in the throw game is immense. What Joe Brady does formationally is on another level also. He'll line up running backs at wide receiver and then put Justin Jefferson or Ja'Marr Chase in the backfield at running back. And that could be a huge answer if Hilaire doesn't play. They have advanced matchup and confusion creation. Let me say that again. Joe Brady is advanced at creating matchups and confusion with formations and motions. Now, what I will tell you, the biggest weakness I saw on LSU's entire team is their right tackle, Austin Deculus. He is not a good player. He is stiff. He is fat. He is not athletic. He is a major liability. And I don't know that Oklahoma has the personnel with Ronnie Perkins out to really expose that, but if LSU wins this game, that will be an issue. God forbid he gets matched up against a Chase Young or an Isaiah Simmons in the finals. The other thing I noticed, and I know he won the Biletnikoff, but Ja'Marr Chase could have never played at Ohio State, just so we're clear. He doesn't block a soul. He won't block a soul. The number of times he is moving out of the way so he doesn't get hit or rolled up on is incredible. But then let's talk about Oklahoma, what I saw from Oklahoma. Here's the cool thing. People are going to talk about who's going to cover Ja'Marr Chase. Who's going to cover Justin Jefferson? The reality is Oklahoma plays very minimal man coverage. I mean, almost none. They know what they have. But what Alex Grinch does is they're very complex in their coverage packages and simulated pressures. Here's what a simulated pressure is. It's when you line up and show the illusion that you're bringing a pressure. The offense doesn't know who's coming and who's not, so they have to account for certain guys. And then if those guys that they accounted for drop and another guy comes, you might not bring more than four people, but you simulated a pressure, and so you got pressure on the quarterback without bringing a blitz. And they do it very, very well. The other player, one of my favorite players in the playoffs, is middle linebacker Kenneth Murray. Number nine, just get ready. He is a sideline to sideline sure tackler. Just watch for number nine to be all over the field tomorrow. But what they can't do, they cannot let Joe Burrow sit back or extend plays and dice up their zones, because that's what he does at an excellent clip. They don't have the personnel to cover LSU at wide receiver, so it's going to be all about Alex Grinch putting together a plan to keep Burrow in the pocket, twist the middle to simulate pressure without letting Joe Burrow attack their coverage with less cover men, meaning they can't blitz because if he gets out of the pocket or evades the blitz, they have less guys in coverage and they're going to get diced. They're going to get gashed. Now let's talk about Joe Burrow. Some interesting things. Here's the scouting report I have on the Heisman Trophy winner. How about this for you? 88% of all of his completions are either over the middle or to his right. Here's why. Some quarterbacks struggle throwing to their non-throwing hand side. Think about it. If you drop back, your back is to the left if you're a right-handed quarterback. To open your hips and have vision to the left is much harder than throwing to the right. Almost 90% of his completions are over the middle or to the right. How about this? Only 5% of all of his completions are over 10 yards to his left. That means 95% of his completions are either middle field to the right or a short, like a check down to the left. That's substantial. Furthermore, Burrow has 234 completions under 10 yards. Almost 70% of all of his throws are under 10 yards. I mean, that's astronomically higher than Justin Fields, 58%, Hurts, 57%, Trevor Lawrence, 65%. But what that is that's NFL concepts, the Joe Brady effect. Higher percentage throws, more execution than big plays. He has been efficient executing, and then he's been explosive when he needs to be. He's also like 57% on deep balls, is third in America. He's thrown 13 touchdowns on deep balls, number one in America. The wild analytic to watch is how little he throws to his non-throwing side. 12% of the time he throws to his left. That's a very high tendency. But boy, does he have some weapons. I mean, Ja'Marr Chase, Justin Jefferson. I mean, I don't know if they're the best duo in college football, but it's LSU, Alabama, Clemson. Those are the three that you're going to talk about. No one has two receivers like those three teams have, and LSU has them. Obviously, the 26th Biletnikoff Award winner, the nation's best wide receiver with the most receiving touchdowns in America, second most receiving yards in America. He averages 20.5 yards every time he catches the ball. He has 29 catches over 20 yards. Think about that. He has freaking 7 receptions over 50 yards. 20 deep balls caught, 75% with his right hand dominant. We talked about that in an earlier episode. It drops to 50% effective when his left hand is dominant catch hand. But anyways, he is one of the best receivers in the country. I don't think he's the best. I know he won the award. I would take CeeDee Lamb right now. More complete player, blocks better. I mean, just across the board. And Ja'Marr Chase has the luxury of playing with an NFL talent quarterback, which Jalen Hurts is not, but we will get to that in a minute. And then Justin Jefferson on the other side. Someone is going to have to, Justin Jefferson is more of an intermediate slot. He lines up in the slot a lot. And those two just provide a 1-2 punch for Joe Burrow that is almost unmatched in college football. But the reality in this game is someone's going to have to replace Clyde Edwards-Helaire, assuming he can't play, which I don't think he will. And it's going to have to be by committee. And Ed Orgeron even mentioned that in his, I guess, post-practice interview. The good news is they use the running back as a formational decoy and free releaser a ton. Like Clyde Edwards-Helaire in the game a lot, lined up at receiver, and a receiver's in the backfield. Outside of direct runs in the run game, he's kind of a decoy, so they can get away with anybody. The good news is, I imagine Joe Brady will minimize that loss of their dynamic running back as well as anyone in the country could do. Oklahoma's pass rush could have been an advantage if Ronnie Perkins was playing, but now despite LSU's O-line being average at best, we won't feel that as much tomorrow unless Alex Grinch has some really phenomenal pressure packages and simulated pressure packages. That's going to be the key to the game right there. Can Oklahoma contain Joe Burrow? But when you flip over to the other side of the ball, let's get back from to the film room, a film evaluation. Oklahoma, Lincoln Riley is using Jalen Hurts running the ball and the threat of him running the ball to do a ton in the QB run game. I mean, they run Q counter as well as anyone. They're doing RPOs off of Jalen Hurts runs. I mean, most teams, they read a guy and either hand it to the running back or throw it. Jalen Hurts is either running the ball or throwing it. Like, he's starting to run, and if the guy bites, he pops the pass. It's excellent stuff. They're running play-action passes off the QB run. It's phenomenal. He's also running some really creative read option plays with a throw as the third option. Here's what that is. So people, if they're familiar with football, you're familiar with triple option, where you read a defensive end and you either give it to the running back or you pull it. And then if you pull it, the next defender, you'll run and there'll be a guy in pitch phase and you'll pitch it off of him. What Oklahoma's doing is they're doing the same first step, reading a defensive end and giving it to the running back or pulling it. But instead of having a guy in pitch phase, they'll have some kind of throw option for the next defender. So you'll see Jalen Hurts ride the running back, and if he pulls it, he'll start to run. And if that linebacker or nickel that's in space bites to tackle Jalen Hurts, he'll flip a bubble or flip a little flat route because that guy's supposed to cover him. If that guy runs with the bubble, he'll run it in the void. And they're doing an excellent job. Some really creative stuff by Lincoln Riley. And I've said it before, he's one of the most innovative minds, offensive minds in college football. Now, I will tell you this. Oklahoma's offensive line is the worst of the four teams playing in the playoffs by far. It's not even close. When I cut on the film and rewatched half their season, I was like, holy cow, this team's in the playoffs with that O-line. That's what Kansas State did. Boy, did that O-line play bad in their loss to Kansas State. They look fat and unathletic. It's going to be a bad day facing some of the freaks from LSU. And if they were to pull the upset, oh boy, they're not ready for the pass rush coming from Clemson or Ohio State. And then you watch LSU's defense. It is straight, like I used to watch when we were in the SEC. It's called cat coverage, man. You got some freak shows in the secondary. Everybody lines up. I got that cat. You got that cat. I got that cat. Simple. A ton of man coverage. The question I have for LSU is, can they afford to play man coverage on CeeDee Lamb, who I think is the best receiver in college football, and can they afford to turn their backs in man coverage with Jalen Hurts at quarterback? He's a runner now. He's more running back than quarterback. And I'll tell you this, I praised him as a pass rusher, but Ke'Lavon Chaisson on defense is a major liability in the run game. Number 18, watch him. He loses contain a lot. He's on the ground a lot. He's a really good pass rusher, but if they run right at him, it's not going to be good for the LSU defense. And one of my favorite players in the playoffs, certainly probably my second favorite corner, is Derek Stingley Jr. He plays with such amazing confidence for a freshman in press, in off coverage, sitting on routes, reading wide receiver demeanors, reading their eyes, staying in position and getting his eyes back to locate the football. He is a solid player, but he's young. He gambles. He's a little undisciplined with his eyes, and he's liable to get beat, which is what happened when Devontae Smith went for 200 yards in the Alabama game. The most glaring thing in the secondary that I see, their biggest weakness in coverage is Kerry Vincent Jr., their nickel slot corner. He gets beat a ton. If they can get CeeDee Lamb somehow, some way, matched up on Kerry Vincent Jr., it's going to be a really good deal for Oklahoma. And if anyone's going to get it done, Lincoln Riley will. Here's one thing that I haven't heard a ton about. This is Jalen Hurts' fourth college football playoff. He's been here before. He's played here before. He knows what he's getting into. So does Lincoln Riley. You know who hasn't and doesn't? Joe Burrow and Ed Orgeron. That's a huge advantage for Oklahoma. They're going to have to pressure him, and I mean pressure him. He's actually dynamic against the pressure. The second half of the season, he was the number one QB in America when pressured. But here's the issue. Less passes get completed. It's not that he's not good against pressure, but when he does attempt a legitimate pass under pressure, he's 78% effective, which is very high. But what pressure does to him is it forces throwaways, it forces drops because the timing's off, and it forces scrambles. He completes 79% of his passes in total when kept clean and 55% when pressured. They have to make him throw the ball away. They have to unsettle him. If you pressure Jalen Hurts, you are more likely to result in a throwaway. But if they can pick it up and he doesn't get skittish, he's really good standing in there and completing the ball. The reality is LSU needs to keep the ball in Hurts' hands when he drops back. He's the only QB in America averaging over 3 seconds to throw the ball. And 80% of his interceptions have come when he releases the ball over 2.5 seconds. They have to cover early. Let the pass rush get him skittish and let him make a mistake. The weapon that Oklahoma has that I don't know that anyone has is CeeDee Lamb, the Biletnikoff Award runner-up. He's the best wide receiver I've seen on tape this year. He's as good as Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins are. CeeDee Lamb has been a monster this year. Let's talk about right-hand dominant catches. We talked about it, right? If you're a right-handed receiver and you're on the right and the ball flight from the quarterback comes, your right hand is the one that stops the ball. That's critical for a receiver. He's 10 of 14 when his right hand's dominant, 71% with 6 touchdowns. When his left hand's dominant, 1 of 5, 0 touchdowns. Watch that on Saturday. But here's where CeeDee Lamb is ridiculous. As a ball carrier, after the catch, over half, listen, he had 1,208 yards. Over half of his yards come after the catch. 642 yards after the catch. He is number 2 in the country for wide receivers avoiding tackles. He's avoided 25 tackles this year. CeeDee Lamb, one human, 25 tackles avoided. For perspective, Ohio State's top four wide receivers have combined for 24 avoided tackles. He's avoided one more tackle than the top four receivers at Ohio State have combined to do. He is a freak of nature. And then a run game. The run game really starts and ends with Jalen Hurts. I mean, he's their leading rusher. He's their starting running back, their starting quarterback. Outside of CeeDee Lamb, he is their entire offense. And it looks like starting running back Kennedy Brooks is going to play. And it's critical considering Oklahoma is without their next top two running backs from the season. One suspended and one got hurt earlier in the year. But I mentioned it. Oklahoma's offensive line is the worst by far in the playoffs. 101 total QB pressures in pass pro. Every single starting offensive lineman has allowed double-digit QB pressures. That is horrendous. 37th in the country in sacks allowed. Here's what I want you to think about that. So they're 37th in the country in the number of sacks they've allowed. And they have an extremely athletic and strong quarterback. He evades and avoids sacks as well as anyone, probably second to only Joe Burrow. And they're still 37th in the country in sacks. The biggest question I have is how a predominantly man coverage defense adjusts to the bizarrely different offensive scheme that Lincoln Riley is running with Jalen Hurts. The entire run game is centered on QB run. There's read options, triple options, RPOs, TTOs, the triple throw options that I mentioned before. There's direct QB runs. Even the play actions are often designed off of Jalen Hurts' run. This is not a conducive offense for what LSU does defensively. It's a problem. They have to have a different plan. If they play with a deep safety and man up across the board on Oklahoma, I have two fears for LSU. One, do they have someone that can spy Jalen Hurts? Is it Grant Delpit? He's a missed tackle machine. Is it Patrick Queen, their middle linebacker? I don't think he's athletic enough. Despite him popping off about how Oklahoma's not very good and LSU's going to kill him, which is really smart, Pat. Lightning McQueen. Furthermore, who in LSU's secondary can cover CeeDee Lamb? Do they have the eye control to play man and not peek at a scrambling or evading pressure Jalen Hurts? That's the question. LSU has corners, but does anyone have anyone that could cover CeeDee Lamb one-on-one? Because that's LSU's entire philosophy on defense. The reality is the impact players for Oklahoma, Kenneth Murray, probably out behind Isaiah Simmons, if you want to call him a linebacker, the best linebacker in the playoffs. Buki, Brandon Radley Hiles, the safety, CeeDee Lamb and Jalen Hurts. Those are the impact players for Oklahoma. LSU, it's got to be Derek Stingley Jr. He's got to have a great game. And then it's the trio on offense, Ja'Marr Chase, Justin Jefferson, and Joe Burrow. My prediction for this game is simple. The reality is Jalen Hurts is a decent thrower and a really good runner. He has poor footwork, breaks cardinal sins throwing the ball, and ultimately, he cannot make the throws that he will need to make to win this game. On top of that, he has the worst offensive line in the playoffs by far, and LSU's offense will overpower a defense that relies on multiplicity and complex zone coverages. Joe Burrow should be able to dissect the zones and take advantage of a depleted pass rush. Don't make any mistake about it, though. Kenneth Murray will be an impact player in this game, even if they get beat handily. He would probably need to play superhuman to win this game, and I think an Oklahoma win is extremely unlikely. I think LSU wins this game 45-21. And in the end, all year long, I've said it, when all else fails, the missed tackle battle. LSU has 102 on the season, Oklahoma 107 on the season. That equates to an LSU win. You got to tackle, protect the ball, run the ball, play great defense, and you got to light up the scoreboard. You got to have some fireworks, man. What a game it's going to be. We're going to take a quick break for a quick commercial, not an ad, just I need to get a drink of water. Quick break, and we'll be right back with the night game, Ohio State, Clemson.
Thank you for listening to Menace to Sports. Our show is growing, expanding, and exploding. Help us make it grow even faster and even more. How? Glad you asked. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Menace to Sports. Also, subscribe on whatever podcast platform you listen to this on. And please, rate us, give us 5 stars, and leave a comment. We read them, and we have literally changed the show because of listener feedback. Also, after the show, if you could do me a favor, tweet out, post on IG, all social media, and use the hashtag #BestFootballAnalysis, #BestFootballAnalysis, and tag us in it. We will repost and retweet. We also have a Patreon subscription service that is getting revamped the first of the year, so support the show. This is really a fun hobby for us right now, but your support will fuel our growth and expansion to provide more of the best college football content in America. Either way, now that the begging and pleading are out of the way, I appreciate you, every one of you. 2019 was a year that I couldn't have imagined or envisioned, and because of you, I have never been more excited for a year than I am for 2020. Feel free to contact me directly. I try to respond to everyone, but I appreciate you. I just wanted to take time in the show to tell you that. Now, let's get back to the show. Under the lights, 8 o'clock, tomorrow night, in the desert. A strange matchup between two teams with a tumultuous history. How about the very first meeting foreshadowed the 41-year relationship the Tigers and Buckeyes would have, as Clemson not only upset the Buckeyes in the 1978 Gator Bowl, it also set the stage for an epic moment in the history of not only Ohio State football, but in the history of college football. With just over 2 minutes left in the game, Ohio State had the ball near midfield, trailing 17-15. Ohio State quarterback Art Schleister, Google him if you don't know who he is, threw a short pass that was intercepted by Clemson, ending Ohio State's game-winning drive and sealing the first ever meeting for the Tigers. That's when a sideline legend came crashing back to mortal state. Woody Hayes, the man second to only God in the great state of Ohio, the all-time winningest coach in Buckeye history, Hall of Fame coach, borderline biblical icon to the state of Ohio and Buckeye Nation, ended his tenure with one swift hook. Woody Hayes throat-punched the forward pass thief Charlie Ballman, and the block-o hat, short-sleeve, white dress shirt and tie would never don the sidelines again. Woody Hayes, the legend, would be fired the next day. Clemson and Ohio State would not play again until Urban Meyer, who, by the way, idolized Hayes growing up, had the whistle around his neck in Columbus. And both results were additional thorns in the Buckeye side. In Clemson, South Carolina, just outside the Allen N. Reeves football complex, there's a graveyard. In that graveyard, there are 40 tombstones, one for every win over a ranked opponent away from their hostile home stadium, Death Valley. Two of those tombstones have Ohio State's name on them, 2013, 40-35, 2016, 31-0. In the three contests, Clemson has done the unthinkable. In the graveyard went a legend coach's career, a silver football quarterback shoulder, and a Hall of Fame offensive mind system as he knew it. Clemson ended the career of the legend Woody Hayes. They ended the quarterback career of one of the most prolific to ever take a snap in scarlet and gray, Braxton Miller, and they ended Urban Meyer's offense. However, from the ashes of defeat and embarrassment, Clemson brought a new, young, and innovative football coach to Buckeye Nation. Immediately following the 2016 embarrassment, Ryan Day arrived in Columbus, and almost 2 years to the day, he will take his enhanced and improved scarlet and gray-clad Buckeyes into the desert of Arizona to avenge the casualties of several moments in Buckeye history. So as I got your blood boiling earlier, Buckeye fans, I bring you the Ohio State hype video to get you in the mood for game day.
I think it's really important that you guys understand what this season looks like. When you come to Ohio State, you come to Ohio State because you want to be the best in the country, right? We're going to take everybody's shot next year. You can't have a bad day. You can't have a day where it's just like, I'm going to kind of go through the motions today, or you'll lose. And we didn't come here to lose. We came here to go win championships. So here we are right now. What are we going to do? We're excited. New coaches, new defense. We're going to go play. Then go play. But don't forget about who we are and what we are. I don't care how big you are. I don't care how fast you are. When you cut us open, all I care about, all we care about, is effort.
We're going to start breaking it down on fight. When you think about fight, I want you to think about this. Every day when you go out there, you're fighting for something. You got to fight every single drill. You got to fight as a unit. You got to fight as a team. That's just the way it's going to be.
We can't can't go soft, it's too early. Never go soft, man. We gotta compete today. Cause that's the only way we're gonna get to where we wanna be. Like Coach A said, let's fight today, man. Fight on 3-4-3-1-2-2.
Just look around, bro. Camp wasn't easy. Winter workouts wasn't easy, man. So don't think about nothing else but the brother next to you.
Justin Fields, hello to the 51 yards. The pump fake, and he never saw the rush. Tyreek Smith coming. David Arnett staying in school. 97 yards for a touchdown.
It ain't us against them. It's always been us against us.
There will be a bounce, bro. When times get hard, bro, lean on your brother, bro. When they make a big play, lean on your brother, bro.
Whatever you believe, that's what's going to happen. So if you don't believe that we got to go out there and win that game, don't go out on that field. And let's go do this thing, man. Ohio State, we need everybody on your heart.
Two things that will bring us home right here, toughness and love. Toughness and love. It's time to let the nation know we already know this one.
Wow, I did not know how emotional that would make me. I'm telling you what, words can't put into perspective what games like this mean and how it feels to the program, the staff, the coaches. Games like this just feel different. You walk around the hotel and there's this energy in the air that's indescribable. I'm trying to put it into words, but I'm realizing I can't. Today, there will not be a joke cracked. I mean, it will be intense, laser focus. These players are feeling this pressure. But the cool thing is, all four teams, they've been trained and prepared for this moment. They weren't trained and prepared for week six. These four teams didn't have aspirations of going 10-2. These four teams were trained day in, day out, immense pressure in the weight room, immense pressure in the classroom, immense pressure in the meeting room, in the practices for this moment. And it's so cool. It's about to happen. It's about to come to life. They're going to run out of that tunnel, and the emotion and feeling of the energy, the stadium, the cameras flashing, it's unparalleled in life. I can't imagine anything that feels like this is going to feel for them. But enough of getting emotional and really excited for these kids, those coaches. This matchup, let's talk about it. It's the polar opposite of the Oklahoma LSU matchup for a couple of reasons. One, both teams play really good defense. And also, both teams will be at full strength and healthy for this game. No suspensions, no significant injuries. Assuming Justin Fields will be near 100% at kickoff, I will say this. Stop reading into the 85% comment. He'll be 100% or 98. He'll be fine. You'll see. He'll rip off one big run and Buckeye Nation will go, oh, thank God. Also, I think you got it by now. It's funny how the media changes, didn't it? I mean, I think it was week 8 and I was on this show saying, people need to stop sleeping on Clemson. People are acting like they don't belong in the playoffs. And now everyone has jumped on Clemson's dick. But you think about this. They're 54-3 in the last 4 years. Three losses in 4 years. Two of those to ridiculous Alabama teams. And an Alabama team that they destroyed 44-16 last year. And let's not act like it matters they haven't played anyone. I want to make a point here. Just like Ohio State, no different. You could say Ohio State's played a better schedule. I would agree. But just like Ohio State, being prepared for a matchup like this does not come from your season. Your season helps. But neither team has played a team remotely close to the opponent they're going to line up across tomorrow. Will Ohio State be ready for Travis Etienne? I don't know. Who has faced a better running back more often than Ohio State's defense facing J.K. Dobbins? No one. Will Clemson be ready for the Ohio State defense? I mean, Trevor Lawrence has went against the most comparable defense to Ohio State day in and day out. Who has faced a better defense than Clemson's defense? Ohio State hasn't. That narrative is so worn out. Both teams have played a top flight offense and defense daily. LSU and Oklahoma can't say the same for both sides of the ball. There will be an adjustment period early where both teams have to settle in with the fact they're playing an opponent better than anyone they've faced on game day, because it is different. But after the initial shock, they will settle in. There's not a receiver at Ohio State who is not capable of going against AJ Terrell and the secondary at Clemson. They've went against Jeff Okuda for a calendar year. I think they know how to play against a first round corner. Not that AJ Terrell is that, but either way, if you don't believe me, hear it for yourself from one of the greatest to do it, a coach that is used to games like this. I'll let him tell you.
The key is going to be, as I said earlier, is how do people respond in the first 7 minutes or first few possessions, because they have not faced, other than practice, neither team has faced anything close to what they're getting ready to go against. And I'm not being disrespectful to Wisconsin, and I can see that headline. No, as far as complete team, the best group of receivers were the Wolverines, but other areas weren't as good as Clemson. And same thing as Clemson. Clemson's not faced anything close to Ohio State. So what's that mean? That means now all of a sudden I've been in a fight. I've been bigger, faster, stronger than everybody I fought against. Now I'm looking at someone as big, as fast, as strong as I am. And we've been in those games, and it takes your breath away for the first several minutes of that game. It's going to be so fast. So it's going to be intriguing to see, you know, get two first downs on offense and play a little more zone on defense, let the game settle down a little bit. Then also they get used to it.
The reality is these teams will be very well prepared to play each other, more so than any other team in America could be. So buckle the fuck up. This game Saturday will unofficially crown the national champion on January 14th. Mark my words. Start off in the film room. I went back and watched Ohio State, which was really a moot point. I know, obviously, I have paid the most attention to Ohio State. But what I saw is what I've been saying all year. On offense, the tackles need to pass pro better. Justin Fields can't hold the ball loosely. J.K. Dobbins has to pass pro well. The tight ends need to show up. They're going to be critical in this game. Ohio State's going to need to go two tight ends. When we get to the analysis, their biggest advantage is the fact that Clemson survives and thrives in chaos and just wild bullets flying around. The best thing you can do is line up two tight ends and punch them right in the goddamn mouth and run right down their throat. That's not how they're going to win the game, but that's how they're going to make a statement in the game. So the tight ends need to show up. Clemson on defense, the question is, what is Brent Venables' identity? What is Clemson's base defense? There's not a person in the world that could tell you. Brent Venables would give you a bullshit answer to that. Because here's what I do know from experience and after watching the film. Their identity will not be whatever his tendencies have been this season. Their identity will be whatever creates the most consternation and chaos for Ohio State. For Justin Fields and the O-line, screw the receivers. It's a coverage. That's what their identity is. That's the film room analysis. Now, here's what I will tell you about Justin Fields. When I really looked at the analytics, really went through and analyzed the entire season and really the entire country at the quarterback position. He's the most balanced quarterback. We talked about Joe Burrow earlier, only throws 12% of his passes to the left. Justin Fields is damn near perfect. 47% of his completions in the middle of the field. That's what you want, almost 50. 27, 26% on the outside, either hash mark. You want to be 25, 50, 25. He's almost perfect. All year, the greatest criticism on Fields is number one, fumbling the ball. He's been excellent. One interception. I mean, that's absurd. But he fumbled the ball 11 times this year. That's absurd. They will lose if he does not protect the ball. And number two, getting rid of the ball. Here's the only caveat to that. After going back and rewatching it, and I still stand by all of my statements that he needs to get rid of the ball. But the only caveat is that a small chunk of Ohio State's pass game is designed to take shots downfield in slower developing concepts and play action. The second half of the year, Justin Fields was way better. I mean, he used to be with Jalen Hurts averaging over 3 seconds to get rid of the ball, which is, I mean, stunningly slow. The second half of the year, he's down to 2.8 seconds. The most stunning stat is when he extends plays or when they do a hard play action or a longer developing concept, the one thing they do is light up the scoreboard. He has 16 touchdowns the second half of the season. So we're talking about the last 6 weeks. 16 touchdowns on pass plays over 2.5 seconds. and only 6 touchdowns in under 2.5 seconds. That means hard play actions, escaping pressure, and keeping his eyes downfield are when they make enormous plays. Think about Garrett Wilson's touchdown when Justin Fields scrambled out of the pocket. The big question here, I think, is can Chris Olave make an impact down the field? 64% of all of his targets are over 10 yards. And we talked about his left-hand dominant issues. I mean, he's 0-for when he's on Fields left on down the field. But he's almost 60% effective on deep balls down the middle or to the right. That's phenomenal. Ben Victor has been a decent intermediate receiver for Fields, but he hasn't lived up to his A.J. Green hype, skill set, comparison. He's 82% effective in routes under 20 yards, but a strikingly 36% effective on deep ball, strikingly low. He is 6'4" with a 7'1" wingspan. He needs to play like T. Higgins and Justin Ross are going to play. He's got to be a jump ball freak of nature. A downfield shot, he goes up and gets it. No one can outjump and outreach him. He has not done that all year. He needs to do it in this game. He has to. And then KJ Hill has been Mr. Consistent. Surprisingly, one of the better deep threats on the Buckeyes roster. I guess not surprisingly. He's really efficient, great hands. Is always exactly where he's supposed to be when he's supposed to be there and makes the catch. I think the real question here is that people aren't going to talk about, aren't going to look for. He's really come on a little bit, and I expect him to take a big step in this game. Is Austin Mack's impact. He should be 100% healthy and ready to show the world what he's capable of when he's not dinged up and he's fresh. Watch out for him to make an impact in this game. Or, maybe not or, maybe and. Will Garrett Wilson elevate his game and become this year's version of Clemson's Justin Ross last year? If you don't remember, Justin Ross had a decent freshman year. Then they went to the playoffs and he had over 300 yards, 3 touchdowns, just lit up those 2 games. Was just ridiculous. Will Garrett Wilson be a true freshman that explodes onto a national stage in the playoffs? Careers are made, legends are born, Urban Meyer always said. The reality here is this. Urban Meyer talked about on the Big Noon kickoff, find the fish. You got to find the matchup. And here is the fish, the safety, Tanner Mews. I don't care what accolades he has. I don't care what stats he has. I don't care if he was all anything. I watched 6 games in the last week. He's a stiff safety that is an average cover defender and tackler. You watch the Virginia game, the only plays they made on offense were taking advantage of him. They took a shot on him, touchdown, a little swing pass, made him miss. He is the fish. And if they can get Chris Olave, KJ Hill, matched up on Tanner Mews, that's a check mark for the Buckeyes. Now let's switch to the other side of the ball. Ohio State's defense has been dominant. The biggest thing I need to see, the biggest question mark I have is there's not been production out of the D end opposite Chase Young. And after watching the film again, the defensive staff needs to employ a scheme to bring pressures opposite Chase Young. If Clemson is going to put all the attention to Chase Young and eliminate the best player in football, you cannot let that happen. You either have to have somebody else getting home, i.e. Tyreek Smith, i.e. Zach Harrison or Baron Browning or a blitz away from Chase. Someone has to pressure Trevor Lawrence. Has to. And Damon Arnette needs to keep his cool and play his game. Play his game. Now, when I watch Clemson's offense, wow. People talk about how they struggled the first half of the year. Trevor Lawrence struggled. They open this offense. Compared to last year, he is running the show. He has complete freedom to do so many things. The one thing he does a lot, and you'll watch this, he takes free access throw options. What that means is, and that's going to be critical in this game because Ohio State plays a lot of off coverage. They'll call a run play. And as the ball floats back to his hands, if he sees free access, meaning the corners bail, he's going to put the ball out and then pull it and throw a hitch or throw a speed out because it's a free 5 yards, free 6 yards, maybe more. They give him a lot of freedom and reads. Trevor Lawrence, the reads Trevor Lawrence has are to take quick throws if he likes them. And if not, just hand it off. Direct runs. If he doesn't like the look. And if it's off coverage, he can take a quick route to his receivers. And he does it a lot. Let's make sure we're clear. Trevor Lawrence is the highest graded quarterback in America over the second half of the season. The pass pro has been solid, and Trevor Lawrence has almost identical numbers when blitzed and when a defense plays coverage. Basically, nothing has worked. They have picked up pressures very well. What they do have is an extremely athletic O-line. They're soft. They're not great in the run game. Travis Etienne makes them look better than they are. They're sixth in America in sacks allowed. Man, let me tell you what they do have. I call them the freak show pillars on the outside. 6'4", 215, T. Higgins. 6'4", 205, Justin Ross. 24 of Trevor Lawrence's 27 deep balls have been completed to these two receivers. I don't care what. That is going to be the matchup. I'm excited to see how Okuda does against either one, and I'm nervous for Buckeye fans on how Damon Arnett's going to do. Not that he's not capable. He is. But Damon Arnett, you watch him on film, and I know him personally. He gives up a play. He gets hot-headed. He gets pissed, talks shit. Then he loses his cool. Then he's not playing like himself. Or even better yet, if he makes a play, then he gets cocky, abandons his technique. Damon Arnett is a wild card. If he can just play his skill set, do what he's been coached to do, and just execute, they'll be fine in pass coverage. He's capable of covering one of those receivers. And the other one, I've seen a lot of things in Buckeye Nation. I don't care what Buckeye podcast you listen to. I don't care who you want to think has a credible take. I don't care what bullshit you've been fed. Travis Etienne is different than any running back in the Big Ten. I've done this for 15 years. His efficiency with his body, his change of direction, and his burst are different. That's why he's been so explosive. Is it as impressive as what Jonathan Taylor does at 220 pounds? Maybe not. But at 210 pounds and 2 inches shorter than Jonathan Taylor, essentially he's pound for pound the same running back. Travis Etienne should make any team nervous and Buckeye fans nervous. He's the most dynamic playmaker out of the backfield in the United States of America. That doesn't mean be scared, but know who you're going up against. There's two matchups that are concerning for the Buckeyes. That one right there, Travis Etienne versus the linebacking core. There's not a linebacker on roster that has covered a player like this or had to tackle a player like this in open space. There's not a guy on Ohio State's roster that is similar or as elusive or as dynamic. Baron Browning's the one that athletically can do it. The rest of them, probably not. The other matchup we talked about, Damon Arnett versus T. Higgins or Justin Ross. That is the matchup. I have also heard for 2 weeks how Jackson Carman is the best pass-blocking tackle the Buckeyes have played. How I saw it all. He's excited to block Chase Young. He's excited to go one-on-one with the Predator. He leads Clemson in QB pressures allowed. Let that sink in. You've allowed more people to get to Trevor Lawrence than anyone else on the O-line. And you're ready for Chase Young? Stop it. All in all, they've allowed Clemson's pass pro has allowed 56 quarterback pressures in total. So they're decent. I mean, they're an athletic bunch. Is Jackson Carman athletic? Very. Is he soft? Very. He will be an elite tackle, but he's not yet. So let's not think he's going to eliminate Chase Young. That will not happen. But he probably will eliminate anyone else. Here's my issue and what needs to be fixed. And it has been fixed, mind you. One of the greatest things that happens in bowl game prep is coaching staffs most forget to do this, but Ryan Day knows this as well as anyone. The two things that always look sloppy in bowl games are ball security and tackling. And Ohio State has worked those daily. We've talked about it all year. Ohio State's, I think, number one or number two in the country in missed tackles. 84 missed tackles on the year. The issue is this. 30 of those missed tackles came in the last three games. They had double-digit missed tackles in their last three games. They got sloppy. And now they're going to play the most elusive ball carriers they've played. That is the key to the game. So outside of that, obviously, protect the football. They can't fumble. If they turn the ball over, neither team's going to win. Whoever wins the turnover battle and the missed tackle battle is going to win. I could end it there. But assuming both teams play really well in those two areas, the keys to an Ohio State victory is to pressure Trevor Lawrence. Damon Arnett needs to have his best game as a Buckeye. covering either Justin Ross or T. Higgins, and Ohio State has to pass pro. The tackles and JK in pass pro have to have their best day, and Justin Fields has to be on time and look like a big-time NFL prospect quarterback. The keys to a Clemson victory? It's literally the opposite. Protect Trevor Lawrence. Get isolation matchups. Get one of their pillars on Damon Arnett. Get Travis Etienne on the linebackers. And the third one, create chaos for the offensive line. I know Greg Studrow very well. I know the scheme very well. I know what their coach very well. Chaos, guys moving, guys not aligned where they should be. It causes major issues for that unit. And Brent Venables, that's his expertise. If they can create enough chaos, just in alignments and the way they line up, the way they pressure, what gaps they hit, if they can create enough chaos, they will really let the airs out of the tires on that offense. But my prediction, I think Ohio State wins. It's going to be a close game. It's going to be a battle. The most critical thing is going to be halftime adjustments. And Ohio State does it better than anyone. Colin Cowherd, the best halftime adjustment staff in the country, is in Columbus. I think halftime adjustments are going to pull Ohio State through, and Ohio State wins 31-24. And why do I think that? Just like LSU, Oklahoma, when all else fails, turn to missed tackles. Ohio State, we mentioned, has 84. Clemson has 109. But that's my prediction. That's my analysis. That's what I saw. A nice little hour-long episode for you before the playoffs. Like I said, do me a favor. If you like this episode, if you think it was really great insight, great analysis, tweet about it. Retweet our tweets, tweet about it yourself, tell your friends. I really want people to listen to this episode specifically to see where this show has been and is heading, because this offseason is really going to be exciting. I'm excited on Sunday or Monday to do the playoff review. I think we're definitely going to do two episodes next week. We might throw a third in there. I might add a call-in show. So I'll let you know on Sunday or Monday about that. But thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening. Really appreciate it. I'm excited for the matchups tomorrow. I want you to tweet at us. As soon as you listen to this episode, tweet at us who you think's in the national championship game. Just at Menace to Sports and tweet at us, LSU, Ohio State, or whatever you think it is. I might even do a poll. So thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening. As always, we appreciate it. If you're interested in advertising or sponsorship, reach out Zach at MenaceToSocietyPodcast.com, Z-A-C-H. And as we say, hope you enjoyed it. Hope you liked it. If you didn't, go fuck yourself, San Diego.
That's why I don't read the newspaper, because it's garbage. And the editor that let it come out is garbage.
Or do you do what everybody else in the media does, just create some shit and throw it on the wall and see what sticks, which is what I see happening everywhere.
Where are we at in society today? I'm a man. I'm 40.
When my time on Earth is gone and my activities here are past, I want they bury me upside down and my critics can kiss my ass.